The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, from Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. We've always been intrigued by stories of disappearances, whether it's a fraudster from the 17th century who kept evading the authorities or a novelist who taunted the Nazis and faked her own death. We all want to know, what happened next? To find out, listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Volume.
All right, the NBA season is in full swing, coming down the stretch. Then we move right into the playoffs in April, May, and June. I can't wait. Spice things up with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA right now. All you have to do is put down $5 and get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Pretty good trade-off. I pay $5, I get $150. North Carolina listeners, do not forget. Welcome to the party. DraftKings Sportsbook now live in your state, North Carolina. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Takes 90 seconds. The code is Colin, C-O-L-I-N. Again, 90 seconds. Download DraftKings Sportsbook app. Put in Colin. New customers bet $5, get $150 back in bonus bets instantly. That is the trade. All right. The code is always Colin. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. I told you all last week that we had a guest coming on that I was really excited about, an NBA owner coming on. And, you know, this for me is a dream come true because it takes me back to a story that we'll get into a little later, but a little banter we had back and forth. And if you know anything about me, I'm all for good banter. I don't take any banter personal. I'll diss some banter out. You can diss some banter back. I absolutely love it. And this guy in particular, he's known for being involved, right in your face, super energetic, super excited, talking to the refs just like I talk to the refs, bantering back and forth. He'll banter with a player. I absolutely love it. And more importantly than all of that, he's an NBA champion. I want to welcome none other than the legendary Mark Cuban. Welcome to the Draymond Green Show, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Draymond. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. No, it's and the story that I'm getting at, back in, I don't know, maybe about 6-7 years ago now, I said something publicly, and you said back, if he wants to understand business, I'll get him in a Kelly Business School right now. For those of you out there that don't know what Kelly Business School is, one of the top business schools in the world, it is at IU, Indiana University. And Mark, by the way, I have a younger sister. She's now 23 years old. She graduated right up at the top of her class at Kelly Business School 2 years ago. She was the commencement speaker. Yes,
she's
sir.
Smart one. She's but the smart one in the family, right?
Absolutely. Far smarter than me, that's for sure.
Make a really smart. It's a good thing.
Absolutely. No, but number one, I have to ask. I know that you are from Pittsburgh. Please tell me you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
Oh, hell yes, I am. Tonight I'm a Duquesne Dukes fan, man.
Yes.
They, like, took it to them. Like, go Dukes, man. It's been 55 years. When I was growing up, I went to their basketball camp, the Duquesne basketball camp. It was at Robert Morris where Five Star was, right? So it was the camp right before Five Star started. So that was a big deal. So I've been a Duquesne Dukes fan my entire life.
That is amazing. See, this guy is intense. He's watching college basketball. I love it. I absolutely love it. No, but, you know, I just want to get into number one, like early life before, you know, all the great business moves that you've made. Just talk to me about skipping your senior year and actually enrolling in college. Because for me, like, we're starting to see more kids do that now actually in basketball. So just kind of, can you take me back there and like walk me through the thinking behind that?
Sure. I went to Mount Lebanon High School in Pittsburgh. And I always wanted to get into business. And my junior year, they would not let me take a senior level economics class. And so I was like, okay, whatever. I want to see if I can take college classes. So I signed up and registered at the University of Pittsburgh my junior year to take night classes. And I took, psychology and sociology or something, you know, no big deal. And I did good in them, right? So I'm like, okay, I got this. If I can, you know, do okay in classes at night, why do I need to go back to my, you know, for my senior year in high school where they won't let me take business classes? So I just picked up and skipped my senior year and went to the University of Pittsburgh and started taking classes there, joined a fraternity. So I'm literally supposed to be a high school senior, right? And I'm joining the fraternity and going back to my high school to take some girl to prom, right? Just because all of a sudden I went from being this dweeby guy to that guy. And so it was fun, man. I just wanted to challenge myself and just see if I can do it. And I could. And that just gave me confidence going forward.
That's so interesting because when you look back at successful people, like you can always go to something and be like, look at that thing right there. Like to have that thing as a 16, 7-year-old and say, no, I'm actually want to move on from this. To have the courage to go to your parents and say, I'm skipping my senior year of high school.
You don't understand. I didn't go to my parents. you know, because I paid for it when I took those classes at night. I mean, they were excited. I told them that, right? Because I wanted to show them I was doing it. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, I'm taking those classes. I'm just going to, you know, go to college and didn't really get into the part that I had to drop out of high school in order to be able to do it. So I literally was a high school dropout. And it was only after my sophomore year in Indiana, I forget exactly, that I called back up to the high school and asked them if I could take my college credits and use it to be able to graduate high school.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. That is absolutely amazing. So you go and you graduate from Indiana, Kelly Business School. And how soon is it that you move into creatingbroadcast.com?
Oh, no, it was wild, right? So okay. I graduate and I go down to Dallas and I get a job at night as a bartender. And then I get a job working selling software. And long story short, I get fired from that job, realize I'm a shitty employee, go start a company called Micro Solutions. That gets me really hardcore into technology. So I learn how to program for like 7 years. And we were one of the first companies in the country to like connect PCs together. Back then it was a big deal. Sell that. Buy a lifetime pass on American Airlines, travel around the country, around the world, party like a rock star, just have, you know, I'm 30 years old, just have the best time ever, man. I was just living the life. And then one of my buddies from IU and I get together, this was early 95. And he was like, look, there's this, you know, internet thing. You're the technology guy. Can we do something to be able to listen to IU basketball down here in Dallas? Because literally to listen to the game, we would have somebody up in Bloomington put a radio next to a speakerphone and then call long distance down to us. And we would listen on a speakerphone down in Dallas with like a 6-pack, 12-pack, whatever, and yuck it up while we're listening to the game. You know, it wasn't on TV, nothing. And so I'm like, let me figure this out. And so we started a company called AudioNet, and that was the first streaming company. And then when we started to get into video, we changed the name to broadcast.com. Took it public in 1998. It was the biggest IPO in the history of the stock market at the time, and then sold it. But yeah, so that was the start of the streaming industry, and that's how I really you know, that's why you know my name. That's why that's how I was able to buy the Mavs.
That's amazing. $5.7 billion. To sell something for $5.7 billion today is crazy. $5.7 billion in 1999? I was 9 years old, by the way, just to make you feel old.
Trust me, all this shit makes me feel old.
But question, though, you just said something very interesting to me. You said you bought an American Airlines lifetime pass. Just out of curiosity, would you still happen to have access to that pass if you wanted?
No, because I gave it to a friend.
Okay.
He traveled a lot for me because he worked for me. So I gave it to him because I bought a plane, you know, and so I didn't need it. Yeah.
I was about to ask you, can you transfer it over to me if you still
have it? Yeah, I know. You're not the first to ask.
So fast forward, 2011, you become a shark on a shark investor on Shark Tank. Yep. Talk to me about that, because that feels to me like something you get into. Obviously, you are who you are in the business world, in the tech world. I've actually seen you out here at some of the tech things before. But talk to me about actually like going public with that. Was it more of the competition in it kind of to drive you to do that?
It was, you know, network television, right? It was a chance to be on something. You know, television was a lot different back then. Regular TV was a lot different, right? You know, to be on something, you know, and 10 million, 15 million people could watch you was cool. But it was, you know, because they asked me to come on as a guest first. Yes. So they kicked some dude off, and then they had Jeff Foxworthy come on to do three episodes. And then they asked me to come on and do three episodes. And I'm like, look, I don't know if this show is going to last. It's about business. Who knows, right? Probably not going to last. But I'm going to come on. I'm just going to raise hell, right? So I got on there, and I'm buying everything, you're right? I'll give you a deal. And then it was just like, they were like, okay, you get it. I loved it. It really sent the message to kids more than anybody that the American dream is alive and well if you bust your ass, right? And people coming from, you know, up, you know, Michigan, Idaho, Pennsylvania, Texas, standing on that carpet pitching us and going from nothing to something. I mean, that gets people excited. It teaches them about business, and to be part of that, that felt good. And so, you know, I did it on a whim because I didn't know what to expect, but I stayed with it for 15 years now, because now kids are coming up to me. Hey, you know, I've got this idea. I'm learning about business with Shark Tank. Parents come up to me. My kids, you know, it's a show we all watch together. It's great, right? So that's why I've done it so long. And I just think it's an important message.
No, that's incredible, because it's a great show. You know, I've watched it for years, and it's absolutely incredible. How much success do you see coming out of like companies that you find through Shark Tank?
You know, it's like anything else. Like, you invest all the time. Like when we had Bogey, right? And he would tell me about your poker games and all the guys and all the investments and shit. And, you know, Iggy the same way, right? Yeah. You guys are like your own little investment club. And so we would talk about it, and it's about the same way, right? You got some big hits, and then you got, you know, the what the fuck was I thinking, you know, joints, right? And so I've had like Dude Wipes is gotten really big. You know, they could do $200 million in business this year. And I forget, like 250 grand for 20% of the company or 15%.
Wow.
And, you know, Beatbox Beverages has just blown up. They'll do $200 million in business this year. They just did a round at $200 million, and they're doing, you know, $15, $17 million in EBITDA. I was able to take some money off the table there. Mush, packaged oatmeal that you see, they're killing it. They'll do $100+ million in sales this year. And then there's ones you've never heard of, right? And then I've had some exits, you know, where I've made, you know, $10 million or $20 million. So honestly, I was right around break even, losing up until about 2 years ago. And then these last 3 years, those three companies have just blown up. And so, you know, Callers and Co. is another company. It's just, I've had some really good ones that have taken off the last couple of years.
That's amazing. That's incredible. And to see that type of deal flow all as often as you get to see it.
Yeah.
That's
not just about killing it either, you know, because I've done deals where it's somebody that I know I'm not going to make any money, probably going to lose my money, but, you know, that sends a message, right? Mm-hmm. That, hey, if I look like this person and they got to deal with Mark, anything's possible. And to me, that's important.
Absolutely. And that's going to bring us back to a topic later, because I do want to talk about how you work with your employees, but we'll get there. So I think it's absolutely amazing. I'm going to just go ahead and throw that out there. With what you've done with your employees, with the sale of the Mavericks, I saw what you're doing even after that, not washing your hands with it because you're still Barry and Boff, but to give back to people who's helped build these businesses. I talk about that all the time. So we'll get into that. But so in 2000, after selling broadcast.com in 99, you then go on and you buy the Dallas Mavericks. When you bought the Dallas Mavericks in 2000, did you think, like, you'd look up 24 years later and that you'd be selling that thing for $3.5 billion, or was it more fun for you?
No, it was all about fun. It wasn't like, I'm going to buy this thing. Look, I'm the luckiest motherfucker in the world, right? You know, to come where I come from and then all of a sudden to have a B, multiple B's next to your name, mm-hmm. I never imagined that, right? And so, you know, my dad did upholstery and cars, and his thing was always about, you only have so much time on this earth and you better enjoy it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what I tried to do. You know, my motivation always, yeah, I wanted to get paid, but I wanted to get paid so I can control my own time. Yes. Right. Until I got an iWatch, the day I sold Micro Solutions, I took off my watch and said, I'm never going to wear a watch again because I never want to be on anybody else's time. I wanted everybody else to have to work to my time. Right. Mm-hmm. And so that to me, like when I bought the Mavs, that was the thing, right? I was 40, 41 years old. I would play pickup 3, 4, 5 times a week. So the idea of going and getting up shots with Nash and Dirk and Finley, you know, and getting into little runs every time and not completely embarrassing myself back then, right? I mean, that was like a dream. So, yeah. You know, and like negotiating that deal, I didn't even negotiate. I was just like, yes, whatever, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And it was done. I walked in, changed some things up, and just, you know, it was a ride. But I never thought, I never thought I would sell it at all. But, you know, the world changes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's been incredible to watch what you were able to do with that franchise. Like, I remember growing up as a young kid and, like, the Dallas Mavericks being the laughing stock of the NBA. Very similar to how the Warriors were when we, like, being the laughing stock. And to watch that and you draft Dirk and, well, you didn't draft Dirk, but you kept Dirk. And, you know, but to have Dirk and the guys that y'all had coming through there and to watch you build up the Dallas Mavericks into what they've become is absolutely amazing. How
made it easy, though, obviously.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but here's the thing, though. You take over the team in 99. Y'all don't win the championship until 2011. To stick with Dirk for 12 years, that says a lot about you, though.
Yeah. I mean, look, he was my guy, no matter what, thick or thin, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, this game is hard, right? Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of luck, right? You know,
yes, it does.
You
want,
you know, and you know the story, like Monte or Steph, right? Who are you going to take, right? Yeah. You know, for Bogey. And so, you know, you try not to, you know, I let Nash go. I might have had as many rings as you if I don't, you know, if I make a different decision there. And so, you know, sticking with Dirk wasn't hard, but trying to figure it all out, it's always hard. And the game changes every single year. You know, right now the teams are so much more talented. You know, you could ride one horse, two horses back then, right?
Yes.
And there's two guys on the court that couldn't shoot, one defender, one rebounder, just a different game. And one guy could get you 50 wins in the season. You know, it's not like that anymore. But all the way through, you have to adapt and try to figure it out. But, you know, Dirk was just kind of a cornerstone that just made it easy.
Absolutely. I got a lot of respect for Dirk, and we'll get more into that. But I know you watch everything, and you not only do you watch everything, you know way more than any of us knows. But in watching what Steve Ballmer is doing with the new arena and how he's trying to cater to fans, what is one of the changes that you would make to the in-game basketball experience for fans? Like, you being a huge fan yourself, but being in it, what's the one change that you'd make to better the experience for fans in the new arena?
Juan Gabriel.
Juanquis.
Selena.
Selena.
Celia Cruz.
Azúcar.
Carol G.
La Bichota.
Christina Aguilera.
Ex-Tina.
Just to name a few.
We're serving the whole story.
From rags to riches.
And all the tea in between.
I'm Liliana Vasquez.
And I'm Joseph Carrillo.
And we're the host of Becoming an Icon Season 2.
Guess who's back in the house?
And we're bringing you even more stories behind the world's biggest stars in Latin music.
Certified Latin royalty.
Consider us your star sleuths, your chisme besties, digging beneath los mejores éxitos to bring you everything you didn't know about your favorite Latin icons.
Hey, you know what, my boo? You're my favorite icon.
Aw, Joseph!
Listen to Becoming an Icon, part of the Michael Thurda Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Well, I mean, Steve, you know, it's great. Like Steve talks about the bathrooms, right? Because he wants to get people back into their seats, because if they're not in their seats, they can't be cheering. If they're not making noise, because that six man is a real thing,
yes,
right?
It is.
So, you know, that energy, you know, people don't like when I got to the NBA, I used to give them shit all the time because the top spots, David, Adam and down, they were all lawyers. So I used to say NBA, nothing but attorneys, right? And, and I would give him shit. I'm like, dude, you don't even know what business we're in. You think we're in the basketball business. You want to hear sneakers squeaking because that's what they did in 1956. I'm like, when you go to a game, you feel that energy that is unlike anything else you can get. You can't get that watching in front of a television, right?
Yes.
You can't get that. When you feel that energy and you feel it when you walk on the court, right?
Absolutely.
Even like the worst matchups, right? Mm-hmm. There is an energy there and the fans feel it. And, you know, when it's bad matchups, there's usually more kids in the stand. So it's loud, right? Yeah. And so, you know, when I got there, it was all about how do you keep people's heads up? And that was before it was hardcore cell phones, right? And wireless and everything. And so now, like, you want to do as many things as you can so that people's energy stays up. You want to always be entertaining, and parents are bringing their kids. And so you've got to make sure that that kid's attention span doesn't wander, because if the parent has to pay attention to the kid because the kid is on his phone or whatever, you're not going to have that energy because you want that kid screaming, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, it's like, I learned an early lesson that I was like, what the, like, and you see it too, in 2000 or in 2024, you shoot t-shirts into the stands, they're yelling.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
You know, other than a game winning bucket, right? Those people are going nuts for the t-shirts, right? And so, like, okay, let's get people's heads to stay up and pay attention. So you'll see us do videos a lot. And so the Jumbotrons have gotten, you know, amazing now because people have to look up. You have to keep that attention. You'll see the courts. So, you know, they've been testing see-through courts that actually show videos, right? And our LCDs, you know, you saw it at the All-Star, right? But it was kind of weird because it was kind of smushy, right? And it was a little bit different. So they got to get that better. But for me, it's like anything that keeps your head up and the energy up, right? It's like Ballmer's trying to do that one section where you have to have, like, when first started, and we stopped this a few years ago, like if you came painted up as a Mavs fan, we had a whole section that was free, right?
Oh, wow.
We had 300 people competing for 100 seats, right? And everybody would be all painted up. And so, you know, it's all about energy because that's where the fans give you an advantage. And, you know, it gets harder because things get more expensive. And so, you know, it's like, you know, the front row, you know, whether it's Chase, whether it's Dallas, whether it's LA, wherever, even Milwaukee, right? Those are the people that pay to get, you know, to get close and yell and everything.
Absolutely.
It's hard. They're not putting on the t-shirts on during the playoffs, right?
Yes. And
So just trying to come up with ways to keep that energy up. That's the mission in any arena.
No, I definitely understand that. And you know, we feel that energy and you feel when it's not there. Like you can feel when energy leaves the arena.
Yep.
And it's sometimes tough because we start looking to the crowd for a little energy. They're almost looking to us for a little energy. And when you have those different type of activations and things with the Jumbotron, it can sometimes help organically spark them that helps organically spark us.
Like, these things, like we do these original videos where we make the guys on our team the stars, right? Mm-hmm. And the guys are up and they, you know, you can feel it, right? And you can feel when you do something, or there's the old standbys that get, you know, get loud, or, you know, the video, like we'll do a Hoosiers video where they're all clapping and all that, mm-hmm. right? Yes. Anything it takes to get the crowd going, because that can be mean the difference between winning and losing, right? Absolutely. And not just on the court, but them coming back and having a good experience, you know, because if the game sucked, right? And no matter what, 41 regular season games, there's going to be some stinkers both ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As long as you can find ways to keep kids involved, they'll keep that energy up and they'll keep their, because if you're a parent, like how old are your kids now?
My kids are 9, 7, 3, and 4 months.
Congrats. Right.
Thank you.
So that 9 and 7 year old, right, when you go to a game with them and you're, no matter what the sport, and you're looking in their face and you're looking in their eyes and you're seeing that smile, they got the cotton candy and they're doing their thing, right? That's all you care about as a parent.
Absolutely. Right?
That is the experience. You remember the first time your aunt, your uncle, your dad, your mom, whoever it is, your buddies took you to a game or you went mm-hmm. together. And your parents, they remember it forever, right? Yeah. You'll remember that feeling forever. And that's what we get to do at the NBA. And that's what I kind of try to emphasize for our people, right? Because that's what people remember. And that gets us W's too, because when those kids mm-hmm. are screaming with that cotton candy, it's a win-win.
Absolutely. No, I, and my wife actually brought it to my attention and kind of made me do it, but it was a good thing. In our arena, you know, where the comp seats would get there, they'd be a little higher up. And once my kids started getting a little older, she's like, hey, they want to see you. Like, they want to be able to make eye contact with you. They want to be able to almost talk to you. And so I bought some seats. I can't afford courtside seats at Chase Center. They're a little too expensive. But we got some seats pretty close to the court. And it changes. It actually changes the entire game experience for me who's playing. Like,
okay, well then let me ask you a question.
Right? Absolutely.
You hold yourself back because you see your kids there.
Do I hold myself back?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because, like, you know, I've, for instance, the instances this year, I was very thankful. Neither game where I had some things happen, my kids weren't there. But it definitely, like, makes me maintain a sense of control when I know they're right there in the stands, so you know that they're watching it right there.
So when Jake's at the game looking at me, now that he's 14, or my other daughters, and they're rolling their eyes at me, I'm like,
it changes everything, right?
Like, yeah, everything.
No, for sure. So I definitely understand that. But I read something where you said your investment, well, your sale of the Mavericks is an investment in specific partners, as well as a bet on real estate being important to the future of NBA ownership. What was the reason? Can you share a little bit more, or clarify a little bit more of that for me or for our audience?
Joe, look at Chase, right? Look mm-hmm. what Joe and that whole crew did, right? Joe went and put together the group. It was all private funding, yeah. And they built a place that's amazing. And that's where they make more of their money. I mean, I don't know all the numbers, but that's what I would bet, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and look how much they spent to get there.
Yes.
I don't know that shit at all, right?
Yes.
I did this because I love basketball. I didn't do this to try to make as much money as I could. You know, mm-hmm. when we would do stuff, it wasn't like, okay, I got to hit this budget. And it'd be like, okay, whatever. And that mm-hmm. it was good sometimes, and it got me in trouble sometimes, right? Because I wasn't paying attention to that side. But now with the new CBA, and the way media is changing, I know technology and media cold, man. I grew up with that. I know that stuff in and out. I couldn't build a Chase Center if I wanted to. My new partners, the Patrick Dumont and the Adelsons, that's what they live for, man. He runs the Sands Corp, and you know, they're the biggest casino people around the world, and they build arenas. This is what they live for, right? And so, you know, like on Shark Tank, I always say I'd rather have 25% of a watermelon than 100% of a grape, right?
Yes.
Down to, right? I just, you know, because I'm not good at asking people for money. Let's go put together this thing. You know, I love the game. I love being part of it. I love the energy. I hate losing, right? And I hate the pain of it all. But I know what I'm good at and I know what I suck at. And I wasn't going to try to lie to myself and do something I couldn't do.
That's special. And the smartest people in the world, you're also smart because you know what you don't know. And that's one of the things that I've tried to figure out. You know, obviously I'm 34 now, so I've been doing some business, but and getting the people around me to that knows what I don't know.
It's no different than basketball though, right? You know your role. And when your team, when everybody on their team knows your role, you're pretty good, even if everybody's not as talented as another
Absolutely.
Team. Absolutely. When people don't know their rules, the roles, that's when things go to shit, right? Mm-hmm. And it's the exact same way in business. And the hard part is going through all the ups and downs of getting that squad together, right? Because everybody's got their own goals. Everybody's got, you know, a limited career where they've got to accomplish certain things. Some guys just want to stay in. It's all different. Well, in companies, it's the same way. Right. Somebody, you know, it's just a start to their career. They don't want to stay in this city forever. So they're not going to be there forever. Somebody's been at it for, you know, 15 years. They know it's getting, you know, longer in the tooth. It's harder for them to keep up, but they have this wisdom and experience. How do you make all these people in the company mesh? And when you're trying to invest in new things, particularly like when things are changing or new industries, whether it's AI on the tech side or real estate and all the changes that are happening there. You got to know how to put together that team. I didn't. I don't. And I just didn't fit my skill set. And, you know, it wasn't like I was paying them to come in. I was getting paid for the right to do that. So it was a win-win situation. And I got to stay with the basketball side, you know, mm-hmm. and, you know, run out in the court when Kyrie hits an insane shot. And I'm in that pile on like, I, you know, that's the best part about owning, at least now owning part of a team or owning the whole team back then. That shot's in the air. Everybody's heart's pounding. I get to run on the court and I'll not get arrested, man. The best thing ever.
Absolutely. And by the way, when you started doing that, that brought, not only did it bring life to NBA ownership, but I think it brought a totally different perspective to how people viewed NBA owners. No one was as involved. No owner was running on the court going crazy.
So much shit. You have no idea. Like the guys, like when I first got there, the old dudes like inherited the teams, won them in a poker game or whatever, right? I'd be in a meeting and one time they were like, shut the fuck up. You've never done anything in this league. And then I called the dude by the wrong name because I just got there and just like, it was like, they were just killing me all the time, finding me. Like the first time I got fined, we were in Minnesota and I always wanted to set the tone that there was no job on the basketball side that I wouldn't do. Right. Mm-hmm. Even on the other side, for that matter, business side. And so I want, you know, the guys who sit on the floor, the equipment guys, and then they'll get up, they'll take your jersey, whatever, give you your warm ups and everything. I'm like, I'm sitting with those dudes. Right. Because I want to get to know them better. I want to see their job and I want to be close to the team. Just get the feel for the vibe. Right. And they fined me $100,000, I think it was my first full year, for conduct unbecoming an owner. I'm like, you ain't seen nothing yet, David.
That's hilarious. Is it so right now, after the sale has been completed, by the way, I'm sorry. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
You know, so many times, you know, I'm really sorry because I have a huge pet peeve. You know, just like yourself, we have friends that are doing incredible things. And so oftentimes, because our friends have had so much success, right? Like you see something where it's like, oh, Mark once sold broadcast.com in 99 for $5.7 million. So I don't really need to hit him and say congratulations about selling it for $3.5 billion, excuse me, right? Like, and that happens so oftentimes to people that's had success over and over and over again. And so I apologize. Congratulations on that.
It's okay. I'm okay with it. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. So, but, Well, so what is your role currently now with the Dallas Mavericks once you've completed the sale?
Basketball. Just basketball.
Okay.
I don't have to worry about anything else. It, you know, Nico and me and just, you know, because when you're the general manager, by the way, Nico's done a phenomenal job.
Yes, he has.
Right. He's a stud. But there's still, there's the sense of a general manager is different than the sense of an owner, right? Mm-hmm. Because the owner's got to think not just in terms of 1 year or even 3 years or this contract or next time. You've got to have a longer horizon, mm-hmm. and you've got to think more in terms of the CBA and, you know, your the bigger picture, how much money you're willing to lose in luxury tax, right? How much you're willing to spend. You got to make that decision, right? Where, you know, the general manager just wants to win or keep their job, whatever it is, right? So it's just a different perspective. And plus Nico, you know, is new to the basketball side. And so there's somebody's got to be that guy that's been there a long time and has done it a long time. So it's a great partnership. I love working with the guy. And, you know, it's been easy for me to give him more and more responsibility because he's so good at it.
Yeah, no, Nico's incredible. I had the opportunity to work with Nico for my first 9 years in the NBA, I want to say, when he was with Nike. And he was always incredible. He was always very honest, which I can always appreciate. He was always extremely honest with me. If I called him and I'm like, Nico, I want a signature shoe. Nico's response probably would be, Dre, I love you. You can't sell a signature shoe. Like, always just honest.
He's called the silent assassin. He's like, the silent assassin, right? He'll pull no punches whatsoever.
Exactly. And I think that's absolutely incredible. And I was so excited. Like, I know Nico had teetered around with some assistant GM jobs throughout the years. I think the Spurs was one of them and a couple other. Maybe the Lakers was one of them. He was, you know, him and Kobe, what they built. And I was so excited to see him get the opportunity to be the general manager of the Dallas Mavericks because I know what type of person Nico is, and I know the type of loyalty you've shown to players who's played for you, coaches who's coached for you, general managers who's been the general manager of your teams. I know the type of loyalty, and being in this business, I care about Nico. Like, we built a great relationship. I still talk to Nico to this day. Like, being in this business, to see him uproot his family from Portland to Dallas that have been home forever, and like, and to know, like, but you're going to a guy that's going to be willing to grow with you, like, you're and is going to be loyal to you. I was really happy to see that because I knew it would be a good situation for him.
Him, Darlise, the family, I mean, the kids. They're good people, right? So it makes it easy for me, you know, and it's just a matter of letting him take his steps and, you know, trusting him to do things. You know, I still, we still talk and everything and, you know, still get involved, but, you know, every day he gets more and more responsibility and he just keeps on getting better. And that's all you can ask.
That's absolutely incredible. There was a little rumor around that you were scared on what the next TV deal brings and that's one of the reasons you sold the team. Is there any truth to that? And if so, what are you thinking about the new TV deal that's up ahead?
It's a good question, right? You can't look at linear television and not be scared.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's the reason, right? Look, I'm on Shark Tank. I see our ratings every week. Used to be like when the show aired, we'd have 9-10 million viewers. Now there's 3-4 million viewers, right? And that's the same thing across. But on the flip side, the shows that do well, sports, right? So they need us more. But then one step further, like Bally's was our local broadcaster.
Yes.
And they went bankrupt, right? Mm. And so they got bailed out by Amazon. So if streamers come in and are as big as I think they are going to be, it won't be an issue, right?
Yes.
Even if I'm 80% confident, there's always that 20% chance, right? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to peg it exactly. I don't think we're going to have a problem for the next 10 years.
Yes.
After that, I have no idea, right? Mm-hmm. Who knows what the world's going to be like from a technology and streaming and AI and multimedia. You know, what I do think is a source of revenue that is under monetized is social media,
right?
Because we are the biggest thing. The NBA is huge on social media, right? You know that. You see it. You know, guys in the NBA are, you know, other than maybe, you know, soccer overseas, right? The biggest athletes on the planet.
That's a fact.
And that carries a lot of value. And so I think, you know, I've, you know, I pushed hard and continue to push hard that we're under monetizing that. So even if those deals aren't quite where I expect them to be, I think the social media side will pick up the slack at some point, maybe not this year, but 5, 10 years, whatever it is. So I think the NBA will be okay. So, you know, from it wasn't so much that, but it was definitely the real estate side, like explained to you. And look, you know, the whole 25% of a watermelon, if we're able to get casino gaming past, resort casino gaming past in Texas, could you imagine a Venetian built in downtown Dallas where the Dallas Mavericks play?
We've all had a frustrating experience buying tickets, even me. You all know I love to go to concerts, shows, and it can be hard to find last-minute tickets. You shouldn't have to worry when you buy tickets to your next big event. Game Time is the fast and easy way to buy tickets to all the sports, music, comedy, and theater shows near you. I'm looking through the Game Time app right now, and it's really easy to find tickets at different price points. The NBA season is winding down, and we have some huge dubs games we're going to need your support at. We always talk about strength in numbers, and we need y'all to be loud at these games coming down the stretch. Game Time is the only ticketing app that gives you complete peace of mind with your purchase. They have all-in pricing, so you know exactly how much you're going to pay. Plus, the Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use the code word GREEN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Create an account and use the code word GREEN, G-R-E-E-N, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Juan Gabriel.
Juanquis.
Selena.
Selena.
Celia Cruz.
Azúcar.
Karol G.
La Bichota.
Christina Aguilera.
Ex-Tina.
Just to name a few.
We're serving the whole story.
From rags to riches.
And all the tea in between.
I'm Liliana Vasquez.
And I'm Joseph Carrillo.
And we're the host of Becoming an Icon Season 2.
Guess who's back in the house?
And we're bringing you even more stories behind the world's biggest stars in Latin music.
Certified Latin royalty.
Consider us your star sleuths, your chisme besties, digging beneath los mejores éxitos to bring you everything you didn't know about your favorite Latin icons.
Hey, you know what, my boo? You're my favorite icon.
Aw, Joseph!
Listen to Becoming an Icon, part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, my God. By the way, I love Dallas. So that's like music to my ears. I love that city.
It's a great city, right?
Yes,
it's
it
like
is.
Now I just saw something like between Dallas, Fort Worth, up to 8 million people. And we're like the fifth largest, you know, DMA. So there's nothing but upside down here, but you need somebody who knows that business to take advantage of it.
Absolutely. But that's got to be a tough thing to get past in Texas, no? Like, would it be in a red state? Like,
I mean, now, you know, there's 31 states that support gaming. And okay. So it's not if, it's when.
Okay, that's amazing. I know if anybody can do it, you can.
But yeah, I don't even know about that. But you know, but we're not trying to pitch, okay, more online gaming, right? Mm-hmm. It's not like this is not app-based. We're talking about building a resort so that, you know, you two can come in here and be the house band, right? Or Travis Scott can be the house band and, you know, for different, so you can bring everybody to the spot and it's going to generate billions in revenue for the state. You know, it's not going to generate $200 million like gaming does, online gaming does. It's real money that states can't ignore. And the other thing, like when I pitch it, right, it's like, what's the one spot that you want to bring your family to come visit in Texas? What's the one vacation spot in Texas?
Well, I want to go to Dallas, but it's not really much of a vacation.
Exactly. Now, if we build a Venetian in Dallas,
yes,
you're saving your money.
Absolutely.
Coming to Dallas, right? That's the whole point. That's why I think it'll pass.
I love that. And I think it'll be great in the upside of that for that city. Like, I don't think people know the amount of wealth that's actually in Dallas. Like, for that city, oh my God, it'd be through the roof. And then you're basing that around basketball team. Like, that's next level. Well, I must be honest. The first part of that interview, we got about 20 minutes left with Mark, and we're going to get into this.
I'm liking this, right?
Okay. But the first part of that interview was for me. I wanted to ask you all of these questions and just things. Like, I respect how brilliant you are, how intense you are, how you go about your business. So that was for me. But let's get into some basketball stuff. Like, you, in 2011, you won a championship, and you were loud about it, and I loved it. but and all the success that you've had, you know, like $5.7 billion sale. I can't get over that. 3.5 recently, insane. Out of all the success that you have, where does winning that championship rank amongst your career accomplishments?
Well, after family. The money comes after the championship. No, the money comes before the championship, then the championship, right?
Yes, sir.
I mean, you see Larry O'Brien back there, right?
Absolutely.
That's the guy, right? But he's lonely. So that's why I'm jealous of you, right? That stuff is hard. And it's been so long now, right? It's just like, you know, until you guys won again, you know, 2 years ago, it was like, when's this going to happen again? And so it's just hard. And so can't happen soon enough, but it's definitely, that was a great moment. But you know this better than I do, right? It's almost anticlimactic, and it's more a stress release than it is a celebration.
100%. You
know? Because you're building up, and you know that's the pinnacle, right? And when you get there, it's like, you just expect the skies to part, the seas to part, and when it happens the first time, and you're like, nothing really changed. I mean, other than the whole city going nuts and everything, but still, you know, and so, but then that stress starts building again the next season, and even more so, and then the next season. So, you know, just for the stress release of it all, I want more.
Yes, sir. No, I get it. And you know what's crazy? When we won our first one, and to your point, it being so anticlimactic, when we won our first one, I was like, wow, this feels amazing. Immediately after that, the feeling switched to, I can't imagine never feeling this feeling again. It almost becomes depressing.
Like, yeah, right. The stress begins, right? So I'm like, we're just going to go party. I'm putting all this out of my mind. We're going to go have a good time. We're going club, whatever Dirk, whatever Jet, whatever those guys want. Yes, that's what we're going to do. I get back and, you know, that's what makes this business different than every other, because the city's on fire, right? You're going to have a parade. People are screaming in the streets. Everybody's pouring out. And you're just dying to get back there to be part of it. I took that trophy everywhere, man. I never had to buy a drink for another year, even outside of Dallas, because we beat the Heatles, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just – but then, like you said, and honestly – that was when we had a lockout, and I never thought we were going to go back and play it all. I really thought we were going to miss the whole year, and so it made it even crazier.
Mm-hmm. No, that's amazing. Well, and then y'all go on and y'all have like the largest bill in Liv, one of the largest bills at that time in Liv nightclub history, and that's when Liv, like Liv today is great. It's Liv, but Liv then.
Was
a totally different story. Like, that's when Liv was Liv. How was that night of partying? Because that, by the way, we went to Vegas after our championship, and I will never forget that trip. How was that night?
Oh, it was insane, right? I mean, you know, they have the stage where the DJ is, and we're up there singing, and I've got this $140,000 bottle of champagne and we're trying to lift it and drink it. And, you know, just stupid shit that if there weren't videos and pictures, I'd never remember. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
It's that kind of night.
That's amazing. Oh, man, that's incredible. I would have paid to be there for that celebration. Oh, yeah. Oh man. Miami? That's a time.
It was fun.
That's a time. Very, very important moment in NBA history. And it's important now on an individual level. This guy is so incredible. It will soon be important on a team level as well with the trajectory of his career. Drafting Luka Doncic. And it took a trade for y'all to do that. Just talk to me about how that came about, how y'all knew Luka was the guy. Because I have a friend that played overseas, played EuroLeague, and when Luka was like 17 years old, 16, he's like, yo, it's this 16, 17-year-old over here on Real Madrid. I'm telling y'all, he gonna be the next one. And a couple of me and my boys was like, yo, you don't think he too slow? You don't think? And he's like, no, I'm telling you, he gonna get to whatever spot he wanna get to. He's smart, he shoot. Like, talk to me about drafting Luka. What was that process like?
So, like, our scouts had it, DeAndre Ayton number one, mm-hmm. and our analytics had Luka number one, right? And so it was, you know, wasn't a battle, right? Because we knew Ayton was going to go number one,
yes.
right? Then the question was, what happens next?
Yes.
We're thinking for sure, you know, Luka's going number two because they have, there's a connection there, everything, right? And didn't happen, right? Gets to number three. And first of all, the crazy part is, I'm not going to use the word, but we worked hard to have the third worst record in the NBA. We fell right to number five. The Mavs have never moved up in the draft, never moved up, only stayed the same or gone down. So we fall to five. And so we're hearing that the Hawks want Trey. Mm-hmm. And the general managers are talking, not getting done. So about 30 minutes to go, it's coming up to our time, you know, either get it done mm-hmm. or we're not going to have a chance. And so I end up getting on the phone with the Hawks owner. And we hashed it out ourselves. And it was like, look, the general managers, they're all over negotiating, owner to owner, let's just get this done. And with about 15 minutes to go before our pick, we got it done.
See, now that's a pro move, Mark, because Luka, and by the way, Trae Young has had an incredible career. Great career. But Luka's generational. Like, Luka is, on any given night, the best player in the NBA. Like, you know, so Luka's generational. To me, it's just a little different. Trey is great. I think Trey is incredible. Yeah,
but you just don't know, right? I mean, look, we make the trade and we go to China to play. And Sean Marion, and I forget who else from the NBA, you know how they have ambassadors when you go overseas and everything. And they're sitting next to me and he's starting to play. I'm like, tell me what you think. Tell me, because you just don't know. Right.
Yes.
You just don't know until you know. And, you know, nobody picks somebody at the top of the draft thinking they suck.
Yes.
You know,
that's a fact.
Whatever it is that you see, you're just praying to God that that's what comes through. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know. And in the, you know, preseason, you're starting to see little glimmers. And then the regular season, he's, you know, he's still getting started and still finding his way. And then all of a sudden you start seeing these things. You're like, all right, this is the guy.
Absolutely. So I have a question to ask you, because you said you got on the phone with the Hawks owner, I'm assuming Tony Ressler. Okay, so I'm assuming you got on with Tony. And at this time, Tony's, what, 2 years into owning the Hawks, if even 2 years? Pretty fairly new. You've now been in this for 20 years. Is that a classic moment of saying when you hire a general manager, let them do their job? And here's why I ask that. Because you, who's been in there for 20 years, you're like, you and Joe are probably as much of decision makers when it comes to basketball as there are of any owners in the NBA. And you get on the phone and you hash this out with Tony, but the difference between Luka and Trey has been a fireable offense for other people. And
But you know, the Hawks go to the conference finals his rookie year, right?
Yes.
You just don't know. And they're looking brilliant. We don't make the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And no, we make the playoffs Yeah, we make the play. No, we didn't make the playoffs that first year, right?
Yeah.
And they're looking like heroes, right?
Yes.
When you get to the conference finals and we haven't made the playoffs. And so you just don't know. And it just takes time. And like we were talking earlier, you can have a generational player. You can have Michael Jordan. You can have LeBron. LeBron didn't make the playoffs his first year, you know? Mm-hmm. Michael didn't make the playoffs his first couple years.
Absolutely.
And so it takes a team.
For sure. Vlade Divac lost his job over that because he drafted Marvin Bagley, if I'm not mistaken. Travis Schlenk has been out in Atlanta. But that doesn't seem like your way to go. Like, you had Donnie for years. Like, that you don't – you. Ironically, Pittsburgh Steelers, you don't seem to flip guys much. What's your take on building front offices and coaches and retaining them? Because they get flipped over like nobody's tomorrow around this league, but you don't quite take that approach.
Yeah, I mean, until you've got something better to go to, why would you change, right? Hiring a coach in particular is the hardest job in professional sports because they walk in the door and they're smart, right? That's why they've got the opportunity to be a head coach in the NBA. So they can tell you point by point by point what's already wrong with your team. Mm-hmm. And they can tell you what they think they want to do to get it there and what you need to do. And it's hard to say no to. So you got to look at the non-obvious factors. Mm-hmm. Like when we got Rick, and it depends on your team too. So like when we went from Avery Johnson to Rick, we had the team that we had, but we needed just a different kind of voice, right? And then when Rick left, it was like, okay, let's get a different kind of voice with Jay Kidd, you know, because Nico was coming in at the same time too. And so, you know, unless there's a reason to change or I've got something better, why change?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. No, I definitely understand that. Continuing on the lane of basketball and what you've done with the Mavericks, Dirk obviously has statue, obviously Hall of Fame, obviously championship, MVP, more accolades up until this point. But do you think that Luka Doncic has a chance to be the greatest Maverick ever? Like, obviously, Dirk is who Dirk is.
Yeah, no disrespect to Dirk. Dirk knows I love him to death, right? Dirty and I go way, way back. But Dirk will be the first one to tell you Luka's better.
Interesting. That's interesting. Dirk put me in the blender at 40, barely being able to run. Man. So I got nothing bad.
He can jump over the line, right? But he can shoot and he's smart, but you needed to get him the ball. That's the difference. You know? And that's part of what's changed. Like, you need almost have to have a 6'6", 6'7", 6'8 guy who can control the ball and get a shot, you know, or get shots for others because the game is so much faster and so much more skilled, right? Whereas before, you knew that there would be somebody guarding Dirk and they would double him, but you just had to get him the ball in one of his spots and let him go to work.
Right? Absolutely.
But the game has changed. You can't just do that anymore.
Yeah, no, that I understand that. That definitely makes a difference. You made one of the controversial moves as of late in the NBA and going out to get Kyrie Irving for a variety of reasons. I actually was talking about Kyrie Irving on podcast a couple of nights ago. The dude just run and throw a left hand run and hook. Like, oh my God.
You can't even talk about that shit because it's like out of 2K, right? It's not even real.
Like, why would you do that? Like, what would entice you to try that? Like, at that moment in the game, but he is that skilled.
First on top, right? That he's probably already shot that ball, you know, that same shot, maybe from not 21 feet, but from 18 or, you know, 15 feet.
Yes, he has. Kyrie is one of the most, if not the most skilled guy in the NBA. but at the time, he had been going through the things with the Jewish video, the anti-Semitic video that everyone was speaking about, that it was on his Instagram, and he had been suspended with the COVID, not suspended, but ruled out due to the COVID vaccine and all of those things. And you took it upon yourself, you, Nico, and your staff, took it upon yourselves to say, no, we want this guy. Like, what was the thinking behind? And then also knowing that he's a free agent and can walk. Like, what was the thinking behind the process of going to get Kyrie?
One, when you watch Kai back then and now, after any game, he's hugging five guys.
Yes. Yes, he is.
You know, it's not like high five, quick hug, walk off the court. He's hugging you like you're related.
Yes, he is.
You know, and that's different. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to people around him before we did the deal, Nobody disliked him. Everybody loved him. When you talk to teammates, you know, current and former, loved him, right? And when you asked them what the issue was, it was like, well, you know, media, you know, and Kyrie's just a caring guy. And sometimes he lets that heart come through and the media doesn't appreciate it. I'm like, shit, I can deal with the media. This is Dallas. I've grown up dealing with the media. I'll take all those bullets like I've done for other guys, you know, and then Nico knows him and, you know, help him issue. Nico's like, this guy's great. Everybody, you know, I know the kid. He's a good kid. He's got a great heart. Just, you know, bad situation. If COVID never happened, probably be a completely different situation, right? So we're like, okay, let's go for it. And let me just tell you, I love Kai to death. You know, the more I talk to him, he's just, he's got a heart of gold, right? And he cares about too many things, right? If he's got a problem, it's like he's too caring about too many things. That's he's the dude, like, when you're in college and you and your guys are talking about alcohol and getting drunk and, you know, girls, he wants to talk about world peace and the indigenous tribes of Australia, right? And, you know, everything else is off limits. Everybody else is doing their thing, right? I just wants to open up and talk about that. And when you're on social media and you're talking to the media about those things, there's no nuance in this world anymore, right? They're not going to get that. And like Kai and I will talk like after Hamas attacked Israel, right? And we're talking and we're like, I'm like, what do you think, Kai? And he's like, look, terrorist is wrong, right? But how can you not feel for the you know, not only the people that got slaughtered in Israel, but what's going to happen to the Gazans, right? And what's going to happen? He's not like taking sides, and he's certainly against terrorism, and he's like, clear, I'm against terrorism, but he wants to feel how other people feel. You know, he respects that pain, you know, and it's not just, you know, the Middle East, it's Australia, it's Sudan, it's, you know, American Indians in this country, it's Lakota tribe. Like, I'm sending him links to documentaries on the Lakota tribe, right? He wants to learn and he wants to care about those things. And how many people do you know like that?
Yeah, that's a fact. Not many. So that's a special person.
He is. I mean, he's somebody that when you get, you know, there's certain people, when you hug them, you feel who they are.
100%.
That's Kyrie Irving.
100%. Did you take, as a Jewish man, though, did you take, like, did you get a lot of backlash from, like, Jewish friends or Jewish family members?
Yeah. Yeah, no, but the minute I talk to him, I'm like, dude, I talked to him. He's not anti-Semitic.
Yes.
I know Jewish people who are more anti-Semitic than he is, right? He's not. You just got to talk to him. And, you know, but Kyrie did have to adjust, right? He had to, like, we had a conversation. Like, look, Kai, you can't just say these things in on social media or wherever, expect people to understand how you feel about them.
Yes,
so you have to be a little bit more careful. And he goes, you're right. I will be.
And he has been. And he has been. It's absolutely wonderful to watch. I'm happy for Kai. We got a chance to win an Olympic medal together in 2016 and built a really good relationship. And I'm happy to see him doing what he loves, thriving at it, and not having to deal with all of the stuff that he doesn't like to deal with.
I mean, it's just the joy in his eyes. Like, he's bringing his daughter into the locker room after every game and his kids when they're there. I mean, it's just, he brings joy to what he does. And he's the first to tell you, this is my profession. Yes. I want to be great at my craft. I want to be the best all time. But I also want to be a human being because I got to live a much longer life after I'm done playing. But I want to have my tribe, right? I want to have my community. That's important to me. And, you know, we don't talk about it as much now as we did during the off season, but, you know, just being able to communicate with him about those things, it's special. And it's like now with Ramadan, right? It's not like, okay, no. It's, okay, let's make sure we have food. Nico and I have the conversation. The minute that sun goes down, feed the guy,
there
right?
you go. Absolutely. You
know, we were playing. I forget where we were playing. Anyways, he's looking. You could tell what time it was, right? And the minute he got a timeout, he ran to the back and he came out with some food and everything. And I'm like, oh, shit, right? We got to do this right. I didn't even think about it originally. And it was like the first day of Ramadan. And so Nico and I talked and, okay, we're going to get this right for him. And, you know, it's just those little things that when you respect a player, you know, from Luka to Kai to all the way down. You, when you respect them, they know it, right?
Yes.
And you
yes.
try to do the things and it helps.
No, one, it does help. And that's what makes guys want to come back and stay somewhere for their entire careers, for the rest of their careers. It helps 100%. Couple more questions before we get out of here. And speaking of Kai and Luka, what does this team need currently? You guys went out and got big Daniel Gaffer, who I think was a steal, by the way. He'd been tucked in Washington, and that's been tough. Daniel Gaffer is a steal. And so
that's Nico special. That's Nico 100% of the way, right? That was
steal.
Nico. He's like, we got it done. We got it done, right? I think we got to stay healthy like everybody, mm-hmm. right? And just a little bit more time, you know, because we basically are changing how we play, right? So now we can be vertical 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And we couldn't do that before. So guys who were shooting threes before aren't getting quite as many rhythm shots, which has made it a little bit tougher on them, right? Because before, like with Timmy and Josh Green and Maxi, they were getting more threes, but now we're just getting lobs, right? And so our centers are putting up 25 and 14, right? It's just like we brought in Shaq, you know? And so we've just got to get used to that rhythm. But, mm-hmm. and then defensively, like, you know, you just got to get, you've got to get put together, right? So
yes.
everybody knows exactly how, where, and when, right? And so, but it's coming together, right? You see it, and then, you know, like a lot of teams, we just got to not relax. You know, when we've got, you know, you win a big game and then you play against somebody you think you should be easy. There are no easy games in the NBA anymore.
That's
a fact. Too much talent.
That's a fact. And I think you're ahead of the curve when you talk about getting vertical, having bigs that can get vertical the whole game, because the game is doing a weird thing right now. As you know, the NBA game changes every 4 to 6 years dramatically.
Yeah.
And the game is doing a weird thing right now where it's getting bigger, but it's not only is it getting bigger, it's getting more athletic and faster. And y'all are covering those bases well with a big Daniel Gaffer. Derry Lively will be an all-star in this NBA, in this league. Like, and you guys are covering that, so that's absolutely great to
and
see.
You gotta learn, right? D Live is still a rookie.
Yes. Yes.
And here we are, but we're changing our style of play in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes time on both ends of the court.
100%.
But you know the opportunity is there.
Yes, 100%. And with this, obviously me being a dub and coming here, when I came here, the only thing I would hear, what's your favorite Warriors moment? The We Believe team in 07. That's all that we were hearing. Me, Steph, and Clay used to laugh like, these people are just excited about a first round victory. Like, what is going on around here?
A long time. Except for me, it was horrible.
Yeah.
But let me just tell you the best part about that series, if there was one, right? Put aside losing, right? I would walk out to the court, right, mm-hmm. from the back in Oakland, and the minute I hit the court, the whole place would start chanting, "Cuban sucks, Cuban sucks, Cuban sucks," and I was like, why? What did I like? Did they put something on the Jumbotron? And then I'd walk out to see if they did it again. Cuban sucks. That was the highlight.
By the way, I get that in every arena I walk into outside of. I get a little bit in Detroit because there's some Michigan fans, but not really. So outside of Chase, Detroit, and Boston fans can't boo me really anymore. They stopped. They stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I get it everywhere I go.
Everywhere.
Last question.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate you taking the time.
You
openly spoke about, and you just mentioned it earlier, the guys that you've lost, and Steve Nash being one of them. How did that propel you as an owner and help you grow? Y'all offers Nash somewhere around $9 million a year for 4 years, and he got 63.
That. Yeah, I still got the pad where I took the notes where Steve called me to give me that last chance, right? Where I wrote down Mike Bibby money. No lie. I've got it written down on that sheet of paper. Mike Bibby money is what he wanted, which was like the max out at the time, which sounds so insane right now, right?
Yes.
But it was more, you know, that Steve had only played like 28, 29 minutes a game that previous year, and we were worried about the injuries.
Yes.
And so just that was it in a nutshell. And okay. So it wasn't any disrespect to his game. And honestly, I think that propelled Steve, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that we let him go and et cetera, and two-time MVP, great guy, love him to death. You know, we're friends again. But yeah, it was a mistake. The biggest mistake I ever made with the Mavs.
No, but does Dirk become the Dirk that he became if Steve still was there? Does Steve become Steve?
Yeah, but I'd rather take my chances with those two guys together.
I agree. I definitely agree.
I screwed up really, really, really bad in hindsight.
No, we all do. Mark, I can't thank you enough. This is an honor for me. I think back to that day. And by the way, one thing I can't admit, you were right. I was dumb as shit and didn't know business how I thought I knew business at that time.
I was fucking with you because it was Michigan State. And people were chilling on me, right? Like it was something else. I was just like, no, it's just Big Ten.
But listen, I look back at some of the statements I would make back then about business and I'd be like, dude, you had no clue what you were talking about and you thought you did. It's even like, not to throw it straight, but it is what it is. To see Caleb Williams come out like, whatever team drafts me, I want ownership in the team. When I saw him say that, I was like, that's how I used to look when I would make some of these statements. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
I still say a lot of stupid shit, but you know what? If you're saying stupid shit, you're trying new shit, right?
This is true.
And that's not a bad thing. So I can live with my mistakes, man. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. That to me was a big moment. And when you said that, I didn't necessarily take it like bad. I was just like, let me look deeper into that. And as I have, boy, were you right, and I was far off.
Yo, I wish you were in the league when Phil Jackson and I would go at it, right? Because then it was pre-social media. And he would give me shit in the newspaper or whatever. And then I would go right back at him. Right? I called him my bucket boy. I called him, you know, Shaq and Kobe and the band of Merry Minimums. Phil and I would go hard at it because it was so much fun because you would just talk to the beat reporter. The beat reporter would like take it and run with it. And there was no, you know, it'd be on the internet on a webpage somewhere, but there was no social media to put it out immediately. Yes. So it was a different day, but it was fun. I mean, yeah. So if you ever talk to Shaq, ask him about Shaq Albert, right?
Shaq Albert.
So you remember Fat Albert, you know?
Yes.
Hey, Fat Albert. So I made a video. I made a cartoon where we put Shaq's head on Fat Albert. And we was like, hey, Shaq Albert. And we showed it right before he would shoot free throws. And Shaq would just crack up, you know? And so you can't get away with that stuff anymore, but I used to just push every button that I could.
Oh man, that is amazing. And that, my friend, is me in a nutshell. I push every button that I can. I can't thank you enough, Mark. This is an honor, absolute pleasure. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with myself, with our fan base. First owner that we've had on the show. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate it. And all of my dumb shit that I said, I appreciate you never taking it personal.
Never, man. It's the same both ways. My skin is really, really thick, right? So I don't care.
I love it.
I had a lot of fun. It was a great interview. Great job.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Mark. Yes, sir. Go Dubs. We'll see y'all soon. Next week. Yep.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without finger sticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.